With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Final hour of Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Brian Campbell writes about boxing for CBS Sports. He's got a podcast, State of Combat. He's a longtime analyst at CBS Sports HQ and Showtime Boxing as well. He's on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. So, Brian, I got to be honest with you. We very rarely talk boxing or combat sports on this show at all. But every now and then there is a fight that lures me in, and Wilder versus Fury has absolutely done that. Set the stage for why this fight seems to have mass appeal and is drawing in a lot of either casual boxing fans or sports fans who don't normally check in on boxing.
Oh, yeah. Look, it's been a long time since we've had heavyweight fights that matter, and that's really the key. I've called the heavyweight division the gateway drug for boxing to get into the living rooms of casual fans. And you know, people have made that kind of correlation before, that boxing would be everyone's favorite sport if it was, you know, handled in some kind of organized matter. But so, once in a while, every few years, you do get one of those fights that slips through. If it's in the heavyweight division, it helps a lot more. It also helps when you've got a 6'7" slugger from the United States who has an incredible personality in Deontay Wilder and can end a fight at any time, and a 6'9" Irish traveler Englishman in Tyson Fury who has freakish speed for a man that size and ability to shift and change styles on the fly and outbox anyone. And yet for this fight, for this rematch with so much at stake, he's the one guaranteeing and predicting a knockout. Every once in a while, a fight like this matters. Both guys are unbeaten. Both have some claim to the heavyweight championship. And when you put them in there against each other, I think we learned in that first fight in December 2018, they're perfect. They are the perfect antidote to each other's style. I've been saying it for years. There is one man who could last 12 rounds with Deontay Wilder and have a chance at getting a victory. That man is Tyson Fury, and he went through hell the first time around to come very close to doing that.
And Brian, we know that you know what it's like to go through hell dealing with our buddy Luke Thomas every morning and how grouchy he can be. So, bully on you, Morning Combat, the show with our friend Luke. Brian, make the case for each fighter as to why they'll win this matchup.
All right, look, Deontay Wilder, if you're not woke to him, if you don't know about him, he's a raw, unconventional guy who came into boxing late, originally thought he was going to play football for the University of Alabama. At age 19, he stumbles into this sport, suddenly wins a bronze medal at the Olympics, and every single person he has fought, with the exception of Tyson Fury, he has knocked out. He doesn't care about losing 7 to 8 rounds to open the fight. He's in better shape than you. He's one of those tall, long, wiry, strong guys. And the debate the last few months has been, is this legitimately the biggest, most devastating puncher that the sport has ever seen? He is not a great boxer. Let me reiterate that. When you're watching him fight, he's a one-hit wonder. But that one song, that one note that he can play, once you hear it, you go down. And Tyson Fury had to get up twice against him the first time around. So for Wilder, he can win this fight at any time. You want to bet a round prop bet? Pick any round you want. That's the type of fighter he is. Fury, on the other hand, is more of a shifty guy, like I mentioned. He's got incredible speed for a guy 6'9". He can switch stances. He can feint and jerk back and forth, herky-jerky style, and really do whatever he wants to set up his offense. But one thing I mentioned is what he won't stop mentioning is that he doesn't want to get screwed by the judges a second time like he believes he was in that first fight. So he wants to be more offensive. He's got what he calls King Kong balls to be able to walk down, potentially, if he can pull it off, the biggest puncher in the sport and try to go for a finish. He's going to have to muck it up on the inside. He's going to have to do a lot of things that disarm and crowd Wilder, because Wilder needs room to get that right hand off. But one thing a lot of the experts are saying, look, is that crazy to try to want to go in there and fight Deontay Wilder on the inside? Yes. It's also crazy to try to go 12 rounds in any form with Deontay Wilder because he has legendary punching power. Fury might be the only guy when you put together the size, the pure boxing ability, and just that guts and balls to say, I'm a fighting man. I come from generations of bare-knuckle Irish gypsy champion fighters, and I'm going to be there until the last bell unless they remove me from consciousness. When you get two guys together on this level with that kind of mental toughness, you can have one of those instant classic throwback fights like we had in 2018 and like we expect on Saturday night.
Yeah, that fight was so good a couple years ago. Brian Campbell on Grant and Danny. So listen, I'm not like you. I'm not as knowledgeable or anything. I'm not a huge boxing guy. But my thought on that first fight was you can't fight a guy to try to take his belt, get knocked down twice, and not knock him down at all and win that fight outright, like by decision. That was just my opinion. Now, I said that, and boxing people got very upset. I don't know what your thought is on that or what your thought was on the first fight, but I thought getting knocked down twice and basically knocked out once, and he woke up from it somehow and kept fighting, which was amazing. I think that was in the 12th round. But I couldn't take a belt away from someone with that performance. What was your thought on the first fight?
The first fight was incredible, and a lot of what you say is true. But the problem with that take, and that's a take a lot of people have, and I think that's why people were so split about that fight, even though most experts, most hardcore seemed to thought like I did, that Fury really maybe won 9 of those 12 rounds and had done enough. But you don't score a fight at the end of the fight. You don't score a fight based off whose face is in better condition or based off which guy has more stamina at the end. You score a fight round by round. Each round of the 12 is almost like a mini fight to itself. So you can have great success early and just hang on for survival and still be the one that wins, still be the champion. I get what people, what you could make that statement, though. Did he demonstratively win that fight? Well, no, but that's also not his style and certainly not the style he employed that night. When you go to the scorecards, you leave it up to interpretation. Everyone knows that. But seriously, Wilder knows this too. Fury has a chance to win every single round. He has that much of an advantage as a pure boxer against Wilder. It's all about walking that tightrope, getting close to that fire, and hoping you don't get burned. And like I mentioned, every single other opponent, with the exception of Tyson Fury, has gotten burned. They've been finished before that final bell can be rung.
Wilder can knock Fury out with every right, obviously. Fury could win this fight just by winning more rounds, as you just pointed out. Does he have the power to knock out Wilder? And if he doesn't, like, how is he so big and quote-unquote lack power, which is what I seem to be reading?
He's certainly not a big puncher, which doesn't seem to make sense, like you're saying. 6'9", he's going to be as high as 270 pounds at today's weigh-in, is really 14 pounds more than the last fight. He's purposely added more muscle and weight to him. Never been known as a big puncher. Does have 22 knockouts in 30 pro fights. But one thing he's done of late in his biggest fights, when he upset Vladimir Klitschko to originally win the heavyweight championship in 2015, and also in the first fight against Wilder, is he'll take steam off of his shots. He's not looking to hurt you. He's looking to disrupt your rhythm, almost slap you with his jab, and just constantly make contact. For the most part, he's a point fighter, if you will, a guy who just wants to keep you away. He's 6'9". He has an incredibly long reach. But like I said, he felt the sting of not getting what he thought he deserved, which was a decision first time around. Again, I thought he deserved that decision as well. So can he recreate himself into a heavy puncher? It's an experiment that he's crazy enough to try. He changed trainers less than 2 months before the biggest fight of his career, which is normally a red flag, but he brought on a guy in Javon Sugarhill Stewart, who's the nephew of the great Emmanuel Stewart of that Kronk gym in Detroit that produced many knockout finishers like Thomas the Hitman Hearns. Stewart was also in the corner of both Lennox Lewis and Vladimir Klitschko when they were heavyweight champion. And he's talking about sitting down on his punches and looking to set up the finish with combinations. He thought he had Wilder rocked on two occasions in that first fight and didn't trust his own stamina to be able to follow up and try to get rid of him. Let's not forget, when that first fight happened, Fury was 3 years removed from fighting. He had gone through depression, retirement, drug abuse, mental health issues. He was a wreck. He came down from 400 pounds. Now he's in the best shape of his life. He's got Conor McGregor's nutritionist, George Lockhart. He thinks if he gets a chance to buzz Wilder, that he can run in there, and with those combinations, he can get a finish. We've never seen Wilder down. We've seen him hurt. Never seen him down. It's a tall tale to ask that he's going to go in there and knock out Wilder in the second round like he's predicting. I do think he will be more offensive. I think he will need to be more offensive. And if he can get Wilder backing up, we've never seen Deontay Wilder fight backing up. He's always in the lead with that big right hand cocked, ready to land, waiting for you to make that one mistake. I think Fury can have success. But to have that success, guys, against Wilder, you've got to be on for every second of that fight, because you take one deep breath, you're getting knocked out. That's how it works. Wilder is an incredible athlete. Doesn't have the form or technique, but he'll find you.
What time do you think they'll actually go off tomorrow? Do I have to sit there for the whole undercard?
It's obviously dependent on the length of the undercard. The earliest they would walk to the ring is 11:15 Eastern. They normally have a deal with the arena that it won't happen before then. I could see them walking anywhere 11:30, 11:35, midnight at the latest. But you're going to know who is the recognized heavyweight champion of the world most likely by about 12:15, 12:20 Eastern on Saturday night.
Brian, this was terrific, buddy. Really appreciate the time. At B. Campbell, CBS. Brian, thanks, man. Enjoy the fight.
Thank you.
Brian Campbell, great information. You're all ready to go now for the biggest event in sports this weekend, Wilder and Fury 2. Grant and Danny on the Fan, are you worried about the Capitals after last night's loss? Maybe we should be. He's Danny, I'm Grant. This is the Fan. Pro Football Talk, tweeting within the last couple of minutes. The Players Association Executive Committee negotiated the deal with the NFL that currently is being presented to union leadership, and yet the executive committee has now voted against the deal 6-5. With the executive committee vote at 6-5 against recommending the CBA proposal, that's not the equivalent of the players voting against this, though, correct? That's not the vote we're waiting on all day long?
No, this is very confusing. I'll fully admit here. I think I've got my grasp on it, though. Owners, 32 of them, they voted, send it over to you guys. Now, the other side here is the NFL Players Association, as we're talking about, right? So you have an executive committee. They're the ones who sat in the room negotiating the deal.
Who's on the committee? Players?
Yes.
Player reps.
Some player reps, 11 of them, I guess, with Dee Smith and company, I believe, right? So they negotiate the deal.
Dee Smith, Georgia Tech, they don't make up the 11. It's 11 players.
I think it's those guys and some players. So I don't know if it's all 11 players, but the deal is negotiated by this group. Right? I guess then that wouldn't include Dee Smith as part of the 11. So anyway, so you can tell the grasp I have on this, how qualified I am to talk about it. So then when it goes back to the next layers of people that have to vote, which is the player reps, so there's 32, one per team.
Correct.
Then the players at large have to ratify this. And right now, the executive committee, the same ones that were in the room saying, yes, this is the deal, we'll take it back to our guys, has now voted against it. That vote isn't official. It's just we're standing on record who approves of this and who doesn't, as far as I can tell. This vote is not binding in any way. It's like a show vote about what we do for lunch. We could still do something else for lunch.
We just walk down the street and we pick a place.
Yeah, like two people vote for Shake Shack, one person votes for Cava, one person votes for Roadie, and we just go to Circa.
So we keep waiting to find out exactly what's going to happen.
As I understand it.
But the way that your boy, Mike Florio, put it, it sounds as though at least the people who negotiated the deal in general, they voted against it anyway. That does not bode well for when the players actually get their hands on this in their entirety.
So it went from, this is the deal that we like, we're going to bring it back to our guys, and now, after we've seen some of the pulse, are turning against it, 6-5. Then the 32 player reps hold their vote Friday.
Makes sense.
Which is today.
The vote is definitely, they're
later
getting together
today
at about 11 and change. So
yeah.
I would have a hard time believing if this doesn't get accepted today that there's going to be any type of deal struck prior to sometime next football season. Right? I mean, this could go into lockout and strike mode if they don't get this done now. I know a lot of people are saying, and this is just posturing, this is what gets said, but that the owners have basically made it clear, you don't accept this, prepare for no football.
Well, this is their bit, and they're really good at this. Billionaire dudes with billions and wealth beyond the scope of any human imagination can go, this is the deal right now. If you walk away from this table, the next time I see you, the deal's worse, and then it'll be worse, and then it'll be worse. it's different than everyone else when they negotiate, right? Everybody's got a give and take, and there are two sides that are incentivized. The owners are incentivized, obviously, to get a deal done, but they don't want to be told. They don't want to be dictated to. They do the move where they go, Grant, here's your offer right now. And you go, let me think about it. Fine, for every 5 minutes, you lose five bucks.
Yeah, that's their move.
You know?
They're good at it.
Whatever it is. And that's pretty scary for players.
If you're a player, you go, maybe I will just take this one.
Maybe I should take it.
They got the power. Billionaires more powerful than the millionaires. Real quick on the Capitals. We asked if you guys are worried. Look, you know I don't really get panicked in the regular season, right? All you got to do is basically be going into the playoffs with momentum, playing pretty well. They've got about 20 games left, and they still have plenty of time, last 7-8 games, to find their stride. Division champions or not, go in hot, get a good matchup, and get on a little bit of a roll. If they were to, let's say, go in cold, win their first two games in the playoffs, then all that's kind of forgotten anyway. I will tell you this, though. While I don't have any panic button in me for the regular season for this team, if they lose to the Devils tomorrow, I will be absolutely worried about this club. I'm already worried.
Yeah, if you're not concerned,
but on
you're
not a level
attention.
Of like 1 to 10, I'd say 7 or 8 right now. It's a 10. It's as high as it can get without me panicking because I just don't have that ability during the regular season with a team that's going to make the playoffs. But they cannot lose to the Devils. I hate to say must win on February 22nd, but you can't lose to the Canadiens and the Devils in back-to-back games after getting caught with Kuznetsov back. After making an acquisition defensively, your GM has shown great urgency here, Brian McClellan, by going out and making a deal. A lot of people didn't think he'd be able to with their cap situation to get a top four defenseman. And yet when you play, you show no urgency as a club. You're not out there every shift living and dying every time you're on the ice ensuring victory. So I am already nervous. I don't completely trust this coaching staff to figure this out at this juncture.
Yeah.
And that's not just about Todd Reirden. Everyone makes it about Reirden. That's much bigger. Their power play has been ineffective for months largely. There are areas of this team like the face-off dot that are just problems that seem to never get addressed. So I have my own concerns as it is. But if they lose to the Devils, then this thing is probably just rotten, and I don't know what the fix is
so
at that point.
I don't panic anymore. People associate me with panicking. The Nationals won the World Series. The Caps won the Stanley Cup in 2018. So the panic is that we're going to go another year with a wasted opportunity. I'm concerned just watching the team. If you're watching them play and go, this is fine, I don't know what you're watching. If you don't have some, what the hell's going on watching these games, then you're not paying attention. Or you're just endlessly sunshiny and I'd like some of whatever you're drinking. They're not good right now. This is not a good hockey team right now.
It's not a week or 2 weeks or a month. This is a quarter of a season of this.
It's not a slump.
Where they're sub 500 since December 23rd when you were putting presents under the tree. Think about that.
Yeah, they are not good right now. Now, the question is, will they be good by the time the playoffs arise? I don't have a lot of faith in that, to be honest with you. And here's why. It's not because of the quality of players. It looks to me, in my novice hockey eyes, like the league now knows what it is that you're doing. And there's no counter in the bag for the Capitals. It looks like they don't have another plan, another go-to, another way of getting the puck up the ice, or another way of getting the puck out of their own zone.
I said in a different way, right? I said I don't necessarily trust the coaching staff to make the necessary adjustment. I like that kind of lexicon you use where you talk about, baseball-wise, use baseball jargon. A pitcher has solved you and is now pitching you in a certain way, and you have to make an adjustment back.
Right.
We're waiting on them to make an adjustment back. We've been waiting for 2 months.
Yes.
These stretch passes they give up, these odd man rushes, these breakaways, they keep happening over and over again. There's been no fix.
And it looks like there's none in sight. No, we just need to execute better this plan. Maybe the plan stinks. Now, hockey folks around here who are really, really smart, you knew something was wrong and rotten with Adam Oates. And people will talk about that. For some reason, Todd Reardon's a sacred cow. For some reason, nobody's allowed to mention anything or even ask questions at this point.
Well, I think partially because in his first season, they won the division.
Mm-hmm.
In his second season, they ran away with the division for a little while. And as bad as it is right now, and it's terrible, they're tied for first place with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So Adam Oates, they missed the playoffs in his only season. You know, Adam Oates, they're fighting and scratching and clawing night in and night out. They're on a historical pace for the first third of the season or so under Todd Reirden. A year before made the playoffs, and the only reason they got bounced was because Oshie and Kempney got hurt. And they still went 7 games with a decent Carolina team. I understand your point because I'm not a huge Reardon guy comparative to like Barry Trotz before him or whatever. But what I am saying is I think the reason he gets the benefit of the doubt, number one, he was instrumental on the Stanley Cup winning coaching staff. And number two, the results have been good under him, just not over the last 2 months.
So Oates' first season was the lockout shortened season, right, where they're in the playoffs and lost where they always lose, the same way they lost under Boudreaux and company. Second season, they do miss the playoffs, right? And tactically, I guess this is the only comp I'm trying to draw. Tactically, everyone goes, this is stupid. This is ridiculous. For some reason, no one's doing that now. I don't hear that very often. You understand what I'm trying to say? Like, and I'm not suggesting anybody lose any kind of gig because it's way too premature, and I don't know that there's anything better with 20 games to go in the season that you're going to do. But my point is, everybody that was really smart about hockey would go, what Oates is suggesting they do is so stupid. Don't block shots. That's the goalie's job, to save shots. Put Ovechkin on the right side. All these different things everyone knew tactically was dumb. What seems to be happening to me is they don't have the right tactics to be deployed against teams that have adjusted to what they do. Teams are taking away the neutral zone against them with shocking ease. Even crappy teams are doing the same thing to them, it seems to be, every night. Where's my adjustment? Where's something different? I want it to look different, and it's not. I guess that's my only point.
Makes sense. We're with you until 2 o'clock today, which is when Chad Dukes versus the World comes your way. Hey, we had Anthony Johnson of the Defenders on the show earlier in the week.
Yes, we did.
We talked about getting him on to talk about putting together a sack dance for him. And he just hit me up. He said he's willing to do it. So we'll talk about some sack dances with the leading sack artist of the Defenders, who's going back to L.A., who traded him to D.C. just this week. Next on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny on the Fan. We are 25 minutes from the end of our work week. We'll hit all the leftovers coming up in just a few. But the D.C. Defenders are one of two undefeated teams through two games in the XFL. They got a chance to get to 3-0 as they head out to Los Angeles. And right after their big win and their shutout defensively, brilliant performance this past weekend, we had Anthony Johnson on the show on Tuesday. And Anthony was awesome. We had a lot of fun with him. And we said, hey, we should get you back on Friday before you go play LA. He's coming off a 2-sack game. And we should come up with some potential sack dances for you that you can do so that we know when watching. This is really an homage to the show and to the fans of D.C. when he gets his next sack. So we wanted to get him on to talk about that. Anthony, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good, man. Happy to be back with y'all guys, man. Slow motion. How y'all doing today?
Doing well, my friend. Thanks for the time, man.
Appreciate you coming back. Appreciate that you're doing this. So if you guys are Defenders fans and you want to hop in and talk to Anthony and try to give him a sack dance, 800-636-1067 is the number. That's 800-636-1067. Before we give you ours, you got traded by L.A. for people that don't know who you're playing this weekend. Kind of amid turmoil. They fired someone. You didn't like that. You basically said, get me out of here. They did. And now you quick turnaround. You're playing them. I got to imagine you'd like to show them that they shouldn't have traded you or that they shouldn't have made you mad at least.
Man, listen here, man. I finally got a full week's work under my belt, so got some camaraderie with the guys out here in D.C. now. Looking forward to joining my brothers and going to L.A. and getting this W in a couple of hours, man. So looking forward to going back and play against my former team, man. It is going to be a good one, I tell you that much.
Is that something where you have to treat it as just another game, or do you fully let yourself get a bunch of bulletin board material, just remember all the ill will and get after it?
Not at all, man. I treat every game the same as a professional, man. So I prepared this week like I prepare for any other game. I don't put relationships and everything at the forefront of this game. So if you're not on the DC Defender sideline, I can't rock with you this weekend, man. I'm gonna just go out there and try to lay the hammer, man, from the first play to the last play.
What is the practice schedule like in the XFL? How much time do you guys actually get on the grass? Because now, the product has impressed a lot of people, I think. Yes. Wondering just how much time you guys actually get to grind through some football.
So we get a couple of hours throughout our work week, man, to go out there and do what we need to do to prepare. You know, we basically had our last dress rehearsal today on the football field. So we went out today, had a fast Friday for about an hour, went out there to go over some corrections from the week and everything and try to clean up everything before we get out there on the road. So, yeah, man, it's been great. And, you know, like I said, these coaches and everybody have put us in position as players to go out there and make, you know, put a great product out there. So we get enough practice time throughout the week and enough time on the field to perfect our craft. So it's been good so far.
D.C. Defenders 2-0, two home games, both great defensive performances. Anthony Johnson came in via trade right before that second game, was on a red eye, and then had a pair of sacks in that second game. You guys have allowed the fewest touchdowns obviously coming off the only shutout in the XFL so far.
Yeah.
I mean, defensively, you got to be feeling good. What's worked so well? Give us an idea, and for people maybe that haven't watched yet but plan on checking you guys out, what do you do that works schematically, do you think?
Honestly, I see a lot of guys, honestly, that just play fast, man. When you look at these guys in the backfield, and I'm talking about our defensive backfield mainly, the DBs, we have a lot of veteran guys. You got Shamarco Thomas, you got Raheem Morrison, you got a lot of guys that have played some good football. So you see those guys, and with the scheme we're playing, man, you see a lot of quickness out there in the backfield. So just playing fast, just playing physical, playing with that tenacity, man, that's all we're doing over here. That's what's shutting out these teams. So, and also, you don't see guys trying to play out of their lane, man. Everybody's doing their own job. Nobody's trying to farm anybody else's land. So when you got guys that stay disciplined in the defense, man, anything's possible.
Anthony Johnson with the Sierra XFL Defender, Sackmaster. So our task here, Anthony, was to come up with some dances for you. Now,
yep.
This all, obviously, the prerequisite is that you sack the quarterback and have an opportunity to dance, right? So it's not one
yes.
of those.
Yeah, it's up to you to make us right here.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
So it can't be like one of those Dana Stubblefield sacks where the quarterback's already down and you run by and touch him with a finger and then celebrate too. It's like it's your sack, right? So everybody knows.
Right.
Can I ask a rule question,
please,
before we suggest?
Because I have three.
I don't honestly know this about the XFL. Are there any major rules like you can't go to the ground in a celebration or you can't use teammates like in the NFL? Do you know?
Nah, man, the XFL all goes in the XFL, man. So however I want to celebrate, I can celebrate. So it's all good, man. We don't have it. There's no holds barred when it comes to celebration, big dog.
All right, 800-636-1067, you got a good one.
Here are my three. Now, Anthony, I'm much older than you. You were a young man
yep.
in the prime of your life, and I don't know if you know all these references, but I think people get a kick out of it. Number one,
okay.
The Carlton.
Definitely.
Think of Tom Jones, not unusual. And here's all of a sudden Anthony Johnson side to side, snapping in the middle with a brief pause, but popping a lock.
Do you know how to do the Carlton?
I do know how to do the Carlton. I grew up watching Fresh Prince, man. Who doesn't know how to do the Carlton? I could definitely whip it out.
That would be really good.
I love that one.
That's a good one.
Number two, this is so before your time and from when I was like barely cracking high school. The Tootsie Roll. Cotton candy, sweetest gold. Let me see that Tootsie Roll. How's your Tootsie Roll?
I could get down with that one. Now, you put me out there in the right position. I could do what I do with that one.
I love that.
Now, I have to Google this one because I don't even remember the Tootsie Roll.
Grant, it's before you were born, the 69 boys. And I shouldn't know that, but I do. The third option I've got for you, Anthony, and this is a little bit more generic, but I think it'd be a lot of fun. People would enjoy this. Just a robot. The robot that just completed a sack. So now all of a sudden, you know what I mean? Like you could take it wherever you want to go as a robot.
I can see the Tootsie Roll and I can see the cards and the robot will probably be, but that'll throw people off. So that might be my go-to right there. I could throw the robot in there. That'll throw some people off with that one.
Like give yourself a nickname like the Sackatron 3000, like something like that. It's Brad.
There you go. I like that.
All right, let's go to Maddie in Stafford who's calling in to give us one. Matt, what do you got for Anthony Johnson sack dance this weekend?
Hey, I'm a huge fan. Shields up. Anthony, good luck this weekend.
I appreciate it, man.
Are you familiar with the WWE?
I am familiar with it.
Okay. Well, DC Defenders are all about the Shield. So like the WWE Shield, you get two other defenders with you. Put your fist in the middle, just like that same pose they do. That would be
okay.
That'd be pretty.
You want like a wrestling stable, like three dudes, fists up in the air. That's kind of cool.
That is cool. I can see that.
That's not bad. We'll take that. All right, I got a few for you too, Anthony. You ready for these?
Yes, sir.
All right, so far, what's your number one seed? The Carlton or the Tootsie Roll or the robot?
Right now, my number one seed is the robot.
Okay.
Yeah.
The robot.
Yeah.
By the way, if you guys haven't seen Anthony Johnson, he looks like he was designed in a laboratory. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
He's sculpted.
He's in shape like you and me are.
Exactly. What percent body fat do you have? Seriously.
Right now, 7%. 253, 7%.
I mean, that's preposterous, okay? And I'm going to take the under on 7%. Like, that's because he just ate a burger and fries or something.
There you go.
Like, that's what my ear has.
So you're going a robot, a 7% body fat robot, just to me sounds funny, right?
Chiseled robot.
So here's what I've got. I've got number one. I like the idea of the worm after a sack.
Now, that right there, because I'm already on the ground,
you
and
are,
I go right into it.
I think that gets a lot of run. I really do.
The people would like it.
The next one I've got for you I've always been a big fan of this. I'm sticking with the theme of you kind of already on the ground. Just the straight army crawl on your elbows, like 7 yards forward, right at a camera.
Yeah. I like it. Now we're getting into it. Okay.
And then the last one I've got, you need a couple teammates. This is for when, like, you and Elijah Qualls and Jay Bromley all meet at the quarterback. So when that happens, I'm thinking a bowling situation where you, like, bowl a fake ball and they all fall down.
Okay. All right. That's a good three right there, man. That's a solid three. Yeah. That's a solid three.
We got two more callers that want to hop in, so we'll go quick to those. Rich and Olney, what do you got?
I think he needs to do the Danny Ruye, what he did on top of the bus at the Nats parade. I just sent it to you, Mr. Paulson. Just send it over to him and let him do that right after.
Oh, you want the specific Danny Ruye happy dance?
Oh, it's a version of Dante Culpepper's rolling.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
It's
okay.
When your team wins the World Series and you don't belong on the parade like Grant and I, but we somehow got to be in the parade and we drank a bunch of beers, then you just kind of do this weird dance of joy.
All right, no problem. I got to see it. I'm going to check it out and I'm going to go ahead and throw that in my
send that one to you. All right, Marco in Rockville. We want a sack dance for Anthony Johnson. He had 2 sacks in his first game with the Defenders. He's looking for more this weekend. What should he do when he gets one?
So this one's a little outside the box, but I think it'd be funny if he did the copied Wedding Crashers and yells out, "Crab cakes and football, that's what DC does," and then pretends to eat an invisible sandwich.
An invisible sandwich.
Invisible sandwich.
The sack lunch. I like that. Sack lunch.
I like it.
All right, so I've got a whole list here I put together for the season. But for the first sack that you have or this Sunday's worth of sacks, are you willing to commit to any dance so we can be watching to say, hey, that's from the show. We came up with that. What are you going to do this weekend?
I have 3 in mind.
All
and
right.
One, I guarantee you all 3 are good. My number one seed still stands as the robot.
Robot number
okay.
one.
The number 2 seed, I like that 7-yard army crawl. I think that will get everybody into
crawl.
It. I love that.
Let's go.
And the 3rd seed, hey, you got me with the worm.
The worm, all right.
You got me with the word.
Let's get 3 sacks and do them all. Whichever one you pick, we'll be watching and make sure that G&D and our listeners got Anthony Johnson his sack dance. We appreciate it. Go get him. Get to 3-0. DC's behind you.
Always, man. Appreciate y'all boys all the time, brother.
All right, that was fun. Thank you. There's Anthony Johnson on Grant and Danny. Now he can't get shut out. Now he needs to go get himself a sack.
Yeah, it's a revenge game. Plus, he's got choreographed dance from the Grant and Danny show. It's got to happen.
Let's go. You're listening to The Fan. Best of the rest before we get out of here on this Friday next. Stretch run of Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. CBA vote's going to go to full membership, so we are on now to finding out if the majority of players are going to vote to pass by way of the representatives this collectively bargained agreement that the owners passed. I just can't get past how quickly the owners were to shove it to the players. That, to me, says everything you need to know about whether this thing tilts in their favor or not. They're not moving on this easily in February when this normally goes down to the final hour because they're giving a bunch of things up. I think they care a lot less than we think about Goodell handing out punishments.
Yeah, I think it was
brilliant by
them.
And I think they view, if they're, in their minds, they're going, if players care this much about smoking weed and being able to get access to marijuana and not being tested for it,
the owners
fine,
are tap
let's
dancing.
Keep our money.
Absolutely. And I think Ross Tucker said this very well. I retweeted with a comment. His basic point is the deal right now is better for the players. This new thing is better for the players. But you're coming from a place where it was pretty bad for the players. The real problem was 2011. So improvement in almost every area on behalf of the players is good, but you started from a place that was ridiculous.
You know how I view it is, like when, let's say you make $50 doing something, and you should be making $100. And the next time you get to negotiate, you get offered $55. And you know that's nowhere near what you should be.
Right.
You say, no, I want $75. And they go, we're only going to give you $55. Well, yes, that's progress, but that's where your next negotiation starts. You've got to make the most progress every time you can. You only get a few opportunities here every X amount of years to renegotiate, and that's your starting point.
Right.
So when you negotiate your salary at wherever you work, that's where you start your negotiation for your following contract. It's a really, really big deal. And I think the players need to think long and hard about that. Obviously, what I care most about, I'm just a consumer who loves football. I want no lockout and no strike. So I hope they put pen to paper on this thing in 3 seconds, and it's all over with.
Agreed.
But
But just looking
selfishly,
at it.
Selfishly, that's me. I'm a football fan,
and that's my priority. But looking at it as, you know, an untrained boob who's basically trying to, you know, work into labor agreements and negotiations, I'm going, this isn't that good for the players.
A couple of other things we didn't get to today. What did you make of David Ortiz calling Mike Fiers, the former Astro, now in Oakland, a snitch? Fiers acknowledging today he's received death threats since coming out as the whistleblower against Houston.
I don't like it one bit. I mean, it's here's the thing. If this is the only thing that had ever come out, it took Mike Fiers to get the results. Teams have complained many times over about the Astros. Major League Baseball did nothing. It was not in their interest to do so. Once Fiers goes public, you get the public outcry. Then all of a sudden the league has to act on it. There is no action without Mike Fiers doing that. So he broke rank among the players. I suppose you're technically right about that. That evil, so to speak, is a drop in the bucket compared to the rampant systemic cheating that was going on.
I don't like
vilifying him at all.
Is that players are bothered that he won a championship and benefited financially and then came out after the fact and told on the Astros. I don't really know how you're supposed to tell on them while you're there, though.
You're paying your checks.
I don't know how you're supposed to come out and rat the team out that is signing your pay stubs and that you play for and that you are, at that moment, indebted to. Just like now you care about the A's. You don't care about the Astros. So I don't like the rhetoric and the idea that he's snitching. I understand he made a lot of money. He made himself some cash by pitching well there, and he won a championship. I get all that. Huge weekend in D.C. sports, by the way. The Nats' spring training debut is tomorrow. They've got spring training games against the Astros tomorrow and Sunday this weekend. The Wizards are in action tonight at home. They host the 14-40 horrendous Cleveland Cavaliers. They've got to win that game to have any chance to continue to pretend like they can make the playoffs. They then play the Chicago Bulls on Sunday. So they got two games in the next 3 days
that are winnable.
And the Caps have the Devils tomorrow at 1 and the Penguins Sunday at noon. Back-to-back matinees. So you got six games between the three teams, quote-unquote, in season here this weekend, in addition to one of the biggest heavyweight fights in years.
So, yeah, you need that Devils game and the Caps need to get right. You circle that noon till I hate the day games against Pittsburgh, by the way. I feel like the Caps never play well in those day games. But whatever, put that aside. That's the Penguins. I hate them so much. Losing to them is like losing six times over, like 10 times over. That would be sweet if you get right against your archenemy.
Throw in a D.C. Defenders game on Sunday, chock full of sports.
Pretty good mix.
A lot going on. Enjoy it all. We will break each and every one of the major storylines down come Monday on Grant and Danny. If you missed any part of the show, thefandc.com and grantanddanny.com, ucradio.com, 24-hour rewind.
For GT, Brendan Thom, I'm Danny.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.